6 o'clock, we call to order the work session for the Blue Valley Planning Commission for March 9, 2021. Our first order of business will be pledge allegiance followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next is a public comment section. Anyone wishing to speak about anything in the county, you will be limited to 5 minutes. Seeing no one wanting to speak for the public comment section this time, we'll begin our work session for the 2040 Blue Valley County Comprehensive Plan Series, the American Planning Association Age-Friendly Rural Planning in Blue Valley County.
Well, good evening. I just do a couple of housekeepings. We've handed out for you all the 2021 contact list. Just have a copy of that. Everyone's information. This also, just a reminder, is what we pass out to anyone who's an applicant so they can contact you or planning staff. So anything that's on here is already really on the website or available to them to you. The sheet that we keep and hand out with applications. So, and then everyone, yes, sir.
On the list, the home phone and mobile phone should be the same. The mobile phone is actually my Elmore County phone.
Okay.
If you can take that off, please.
Oh, this is your mobile phone?
Yeah, the mobile phone is my Elmore County phone.
Okay. Your home phone, this home phone is your mobile phone as well?
Yes.
Okay, we'll just take that other mobile phone completely off.
And if you'll do the same for me, please. My home phone, 3542. That's going to be disconnected next week because you have. The one where it's 3542, Lewis Johnson.
The home phone?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you're just going with everything mobile?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I sent you guys in your packets. Did everyone get the packet with that one right there? Should have got that a week or so ago. Yeah, everyone, you should have received one Scott delivered to you.
No, nobody brought me anything.
Okay, it was in a white envelope.
It looks like this.
Looks like that.
Never got it.
Okay.
Here you go.
Well, here you go. I'm going to give you the one
I got one here.
Yeah, I don't need this, Mr. Dunn. You're going to need it tonight, so that's why I'm giving this. This is the material that we can't send to share file. It's too large.
Okay.
So we had hand-delivered it about 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I read, I should be receiving something, but
okay.
Just an opinion.
Sorry about that. Well, there you go. That's a copy that you can use tonight for that'll be part of the application's public hearing presentation you'll see on the screen.
You want it back?
No, it's yours to keep, sir.
Thank you.
A lot of applicants are still submitting paper documents to us, and what we're actually going to be doing is start ask them not to do that, and we started in EnerGov for a lot of our applications to scan everything into the computer in 2021 so that we don't have these paper documents coming to you all. So then that way, once we go to send this information out, it'll already be digitized and put in the system.
So when you say that, are you saying they're going to scan it in to you all, but we will still have the digital version and a hard copy?
No, we won't be doing the papers anymore. We're going to try to get away from that because it's a little more expensive for us. But a lot of what we're really doing, Valencia and Jason are doing a lot of this. We're really putting everything into the EnerGov digital system. So a lot of these documents, when we get them from the applicants, we're getting them from Timmins and Chimp Engineering and all that. It's just digital. We don't get the paper versions anymore for submittals, or we're actually encouraging them not to do that. And so they're basically trimming down on that. It's more also COVID-related, we don't want to be touching paper documents, leaving it in various offices and all like that. So the only thing that we receive now that are paper are checks, because we don't have a, paper checks come into a box outside of our door. So we're trying to still can provide these to you as we make that transition. Because they actually filed a lot of these before the holidays, actually the Shemp Engineering folks. So, but a lot of the ones that we're doing now will be all electronic, and then that way you'll actually, tonight, you're going to actually see the applicants providing slides and presentations for the ones that they did at the neighborhood meetings in January and February. So that way, it's more in the private sector that's happening, so we're trying to be the same in the public county-level sector. So yes, we can get any of the mobile numbers taken off. This isn't posted anywhere at this time right now. It's just information for you all. So what we want to do is we're, as some of you who are currently serving on the Transportation Subcommittee, Mr. Bibb and Mr. Largo-Messina, that transportation work session material that's going on every month after the TRC meeting, we're also going to each month, and we'll work with Chairman Bibb on probably July, not doing this, but each month we're going to do a work session on a section or component of the comp plan. And the one that we've selected to do first, and it's actually coming straight through the National EPA, American Planning Association, and as I go into some of the slides in the work session, we've actually had individuals come to us in the last couple weeks for senior housing complex, multifamily, like Colonial Circle, and then a senior housing complex, which we'll show you at the Village Oaks property that's located outside of main gate at the lake. So this is very timely and information that Mr. Overstreet helped me as well to kind of put together some demographics. So basically what's going on as far as and this we're already 1 year into 2030, so by the year 2030, in less than 10 years, one in every five persons in the United States will be over 65 years old. America, Virginia, and Savannah are aging at a very fast rate. The other kind of more surprising number is more of the United States will be over the age of 65 than those people that are from birth to 18. So we're actually, if you think of all the world's countries and economies, we're a country that is not growing in age, growing like India and China and Brazil and all these other up-and-coming countries. And I'm not saying on any of that in the negative aspect. What I'm trying to point out is the shift in how we do housing, how we do land use and transportation is towards the middle age to upper age individuals. So all of your people who are baby boomers and like my parents are interwar year people being born in 36 and 42 to people even older than that. So the main tenants are the built environment right now. As all of us know, is affordable housing, and in this kind of discussion is affordable senior housing. And the reason it's so important in Virginia and specifically Savannah is three-quarters of all of our older residents that live in rural areas in the suburbs live in what, a single-family, two-story home, two-story colonial home, or they actually live in a single or a tri-level home that has multiple levels, and that's even more challenging. So that sometimes in those split entrance homes where you come in, you can go downstairs, you go upstairs, That's even more challenging than if you just walked in. Like, for instance, my best friend's parents live in a two-story home, and they only live on the first floor. They haven't been on the second floor in, like, 5 years. And that housing stock that we have, it's the home that they lived in for over 25 years. So when they raise their children, and now their grandparents, and having their children strolling over the weekend or whatever. So basically, right now in the affordable arena for housing, senior housing is non-existent. I mean, you basically have the Nahor Village neighborhood that's almost built out. I think there's approximately about 4 to 5 homes that are still being built in that front section. But we'll kind of go over some more other housing options and things like that. So some of the pluses. So in the last year, what we found out, nursing homes are not viable housing, fortunately, seniors in today's COVID environment. Folks that go into assisted living or nursing homes, those type of scenarios or settings, people operate and own them are having to completely change the dynamic of how people live in a nursing home or assisted living facilities, and kind of show you some examples of some of that. What's been happening here, fortunately, some of the major developers is an option for multi-generational neighborhoods needed, that you're not segregating housing by age groups. So for instance, in the Village Oaks subdivision or development, the houses are not age restricted, townhouse only, single family house only, and then senior apartments there soon, so that you have some diversity. And again, there's nothing wrong. There's a lot of very good age-restricted 55 and older subdivisions and developments. But even some of those locations throughout Central Virginia, people are deciding that after living there for 10 or 15 years, it's also not really what they're interested in. But it helped them for a while as they were somewhat getting older. So where does that leave us, or where is kind of the planning research showing? For those that don't want to move, a lot of them are deciding to what's called age in place and remodeling their home or selling their home to their children and creating a single story home that's more accessible. Some of the most important things about being accessible are where we spend most of our time, in kitchens, where you're cooking and preparing foods, and not just at the holidays, but throughout the week and month. And a lot of the things dealing with concerns with seniors is bathrooms and accessibility into tubs and showers and conversions, where they can still be aging in place and utilize their home without having to leave their home or have others assist them. So basically, where we spend most of our time at any age, that's the same where seniors are doing it. So it can be very challenging. So those are some of the builder type options that people are now doing. I will tell you this: when we bought our house, we immediately put in a walk-in shower. That knowing in 15 to 20 years, we're going to be doing that. I'm 53. 20 years, I'm 74. I mean. So, you know, when we bought our house and changed some of the things in our bathroom, we did those not only for our mothers that might live with us eventually, but for ourselves. So that's already taken care of. So Mr. Overstreet put some numbers together. This kind of gets us right down into Flavanna. So the total population in the survey time frame from 2015 to 2019 in the census data is telling us that approximately 20% of the people that live here in the county, you know, 65 and older, almost a third of folks with households actually have one or more persons being 65 and older. Kind of getting more specific into the largest development, Lake Monticello, census designated place, has approximately 11,000 people living there, and you know, almost a quarter of them are 65 and older. And then that number even increases to almost 40% of the lake has folks that are 65 and older. And the immediate people that live around Christine and I in our home, in our neighborhoods, we have a majority of people who are two seniors with one car. They've chosen to eliminate the second car and take care of things on one car. And we'll kind of explain that as we get into one of the apartments. And yeah, if you all have any questions, again, it's a work session. I'm just trying to, point out kind of where we're at, and then in the end of the discussion, I really want to, Jason and I really want to get some of your ideas of what we're going to put into the comp plan. Currently in the comp plan for addressing things with seniors and senior housing, it's a half a page. Half a page of that entire 120-something page. So and we know that we can do better with that. I think it was just at the time that the comp plan was put together, a lot of the senior things were formulated and being discussed in from 2010 to 2015 as that plan was looked at. So this is more Mr. Overstreet's analysis. Levanta County, our aging demographic trends. You can see basically this is broken down by age and by gender, so we have a much larger, women live longer than men, so well, as you age in that bar graph there, you'll see that women are living longer in the latter parts of the years, and the basic percentage is what we see across Virginia as well. It's pretty similar. Then now breaking it down more, into Lake Monticello, specifically as a census designated place. The lake is actually the amount of people moving in and out in their working years. That area, that time frame is showing up more here, especially in the center, 45 to 49 age, middle-aged men and women are living there and completing some of their time in their careers here at Levanta and Charlotte School. So that breakdown, as you can see, are both pretty much about the same until you get much older. And then, of course, the gender, females living longer than men, still rather prevalent. So kind of going right at the harder thoughts about, in working with some senior housing developers recently in the last week or two, Mr. Dahl, Mr. Rothman, and I, everyone has a shortage of accessible housing that's starting to change in the market. But we have, fortunately, senior housing options that are zoned, they're just not built yet. And that market is growing rapidly for us. So we're actually having individuals and developers coming forward and looking at that. So we'll kind of do a case study here. And I'll show a graphic of what they want. They brought this up to the board last Wednesday, Mr. Dahl did. And they've asked us to bring it up to you all as the commissioners. So the Village Oaks Senior Apartments are currently, and I'll show the graphic in a minute, but there's 60 senior apartment units that could be built, and they would like to look at taking all of that area, which is currently senior apartments and commercial, and creating up to 120 senior apartments, because they've put the market analysis on it, and the senior apartments for 120 would be basically occupied in about 6 months to a year is their projection. So this is what we met with. It's a nonprofit group, the United Methodist Housing Development Corporation. They have numerous senior housing complexes throughout Virginia. They started out, obviously, in Northern Virginia in the high-density areas in the 80s. Have made their ways into various larger markets. Richmond, they're based out of Reno currently, where they do most of their development. But this is the entrance over there. That's the entrance into Village Oaks. It's closest to the main gate. And the future development on the right is the current senior housing parcel. And then the phase two portion is the commercial parcel that Southern Development has had a real hard time to market because it's just one available piece of property. So they would like to propose to Flavanna County to do 123 unit complex. And these would be age restricted, and there are no tax credits needed for this type of development. It's a nonprofit. And basically, this complex is something that we currently don't have as far as housing stock. And at this point, we looked at working with them in the top left-hand corner of the current townhouses that are being built. So from a development standpoint, the townhouses and the apartments would basically be abutting one another rather than single family. And that's their current architect's design out of Charlottesville that presented this information to us last Wednesday from Cal Studios in Charlottesville. And really at this point, to achieve that, they would have to come back to you all at the Planning Commission and the board and ask for a special use permit throughout the entire property, but also to be on the commercial parcel and amend their zoning to do that. So right now, I'm not sure. I think some of you may be aware. I know Mrs. Eager and Mr. Payne. At the board level, we've been working with Colonial Circle. I'll kind of go on to that. Colonial Circle's master plan, that you all zoned in June of 2019. The single-story walkable homes that are kind of located in the center-rear portion of the development. Stanley Martin has come into the county at this point and expressed an interest in constructing those. And we've been working with apartment developer out of Charlottesville to develop the multifamily that's located right behind the commercial. So again, some of these R3 residential plan communities like this, getting us all back to an opportunity to be more walkable. To the research shows even folks who are in their 60s and to mid-60s, mid-80s, are still interested in walking and doing things rather than just staying in their large two-story home and not socializing or working, socializing with others in their community. So these type of single-family homes that are available would be ones that could possibly be for seniors on the first floor. The other things that we're doing, and I will tell you, that we're currently doing, and I actually had three requests for these today. I don't normally get but about one a week, but accessory dwelling units, where family members or others who may be related to the family, would have additional living space inside of homes or in accessory dwellings, like detached garages. Most of our, like we talked about before, the neighbor village type scenarios, the national research has shown that the age-restricted communities are isolated, not interconnected like we just showed in the colonial circle. They are restricting, whether far away from senior services, and everything's required to have a car. And most people that are in those communities actually have multiple cars for parking and concerns. So some of the kind of things that are unfortunately in some of the research, older seniors in our community and their caregivers unfortunately find themselves not only just aging in place, but just in a survival mode, style living, where we have a very strong, here in Flavanna County, volunteer service and volunteer network, Meals on Wheels, and doing all the things to reach out to some of those folks who are not asking for help. We're not asking for help through their church or through some other organization, NACA, any of the food banks that we've seen in the last year. So the solid volunteer effort that you may have read in some of the information that provided age-friendly rural planning is, but again, if you look at the amount of people and the people who are those volunteers, they're actually the same people in almost the exact same age that they're serving. So the volunteer effort, how long will that volunteer effort work going on? We have information that people do step up and their children start doing it. So, and mentioning all this, I'm not looking at, it's increasing and constantly increasing federal and state social services and things like that. Those are available. Folks, like going back to the example of the Virginia United Methodist Housing Corporation, they actually link some of that the senior services and work with JAVA, work with JAWN, and work with all the other extensions so that they create more of a network for people to be at the senior centers and the senior apartment complexes to assist them. Because a lot of times, people who are aging in place, they're not even aware of some of the services until someone from Meals on Wheels or someone from JAVA tells them about them. So it's very unfortunate. So the last part, and most of us know this, anyone in our family, some of our relatives, aging can be very personal. And the most important part we want to do for our older family members is to help them maintain their dignity so that they feel that they're still a solid participant in the community that they live in. But we're actually looking to them to provide more guidance and things and not just provide handouts or things in that nature. So that's basically, I've actually purposely left a blank slide in this kind of work session environment so that I can take a few minutes and write down some things that you all would like us to work on with staff in this environment of senior housing and senior services, or things that you've seen in this community and serving on the planning commission and so on. So really at this point I'd like to kind of turn it over to Chairman Bibb and let you all kind of help us. thoughts and ideas on where you see us putting some of this information into the comprehensive plan and to other documents that, you've seen that are, have been helpful in the, community.
One thing I wondered is, as we go forward with the development and the designs crossroads area, would something like that, because of the services available and the availability of the interstate and other places, would something like this be a good thing to try to work into that area as things develop, especially with the fact that we're getting water to that area?
Yes. And the water and sewer up in that area can create opportunities for additional things. We've actually talked on Thursday at the Transportation Subcommittee meeting. Sandy Shackelford from the Thomas Jefferson PDC will be speaking to you all, providing an update. One of the things that we found in working with Mr. Spitzer and Brian Rothamel's father, who's the pastor at Beaver Dam Baptist, that's church right now is our senior center there. We don't have a senior center in that area, and they've been gracious enough to offer that up for us. Meeting spaces and locations in the Zion Crossroads area are non-existent, unfortunately, and that's what we're hoping to change. A lot of times when we, year and a half or so ago, almost, we did the Morris rezoning case up there in the Beaver Dam Baptist Church, so we didn't have a community center or anything in that area to meet in. So again, it's, a lot of our churches throughout the county have been helpful to provide us that meeting space. I'm very grateful for it, but in other parts of the county, we do have the community centers available for folks to meet in. And the dynamic and the shift of providing senior services is totally changed in COVID. Talking to Mr. Spitzer and his staff that used a lot of those things for outreach rather than coming together in the Carry the Brook Gym or the Fort Union Community Center.
I do know that Habitat for Humanity is beginning to start a project in Louisa County of building small houses, basically living rooms, bathroom, kitchen type thing, for people that need housing, plus people that are aging. And also, I think they're from what I learned from someone who's a member of that Habitat for Humanity today and talked to them this morning at breakfast, that they're interested in doing something similar in Fluvanna County. Any other people have any comments or something like that? Mr. Larsino?
When I was listening to the presentation, obviously the built environment is something that we got to look at. The land use policy is something we got to look at. But when we start talking about the services that these folks are going to need, as part of the planning process, we need to think about medical facilities, how are people going to get to their appointments? How are they, is there some sort of public transportation? Can Jaunt maybe build that route? And then when you start looking at some of the needs and the impact on infrastructure into the county, we start looking at calls for service for our emergency providers. You would expect an increase in calls for service for this type of community, just looking at the types of needs that they would have. And so when I start looking at that, I start wondering, what the volunteers in this area can provide a service, and I know that we have some contract paid staffing, but what effort have we made to recruit more volunteers? Has emergency management taken up an effort to recruit more volunteers to offset those costs? When we're looking at this, we need to look at it in a holistic approach. What is going to be our approach from an emergency management standpoint, also from a transportation standpoint, and from a services standpoint that these people will need?
Yeah, and the folks at the United Methodist Development Housing Corporation, they talked about the immediate need to have Jaunt's service. That would be pretty regular at this type of senior housing apartment complex. And right now, in working in one of the cases you'll see tonight in the Colonial Circle, Efford Baptist Church up the street is actually the current shuttle location in Park and Ride Lot for just everyone, not just, you know, seniors. So so the area for the Lake Monticello corridor, we may actually see more, as this corridor grows, more jaunt stops and locations for them to get to. When I first got here in the summer of 2019, I actually worked with Mrs. Murray Key when we went to Thomas Jefferson PDC workshops and everything. And a lot of the folks, and not just seniors, when they go to their medical appointments, they're one and done. They go to Charlottesville for a medical appointment, they get right back on jaunt, and they come home. And a lot of times, in working with the folks in the shared bus services with jaunt, University, UVA, you know, shuttle, and then CAT, a lot of people didn't know you could get onto CAT now after you take jaunt and go do other things while you're in there. So, and then vice versa. When they come out here to jaunt, eventually someday is there going to be an opportunity to, you know, go from the senior apartments to Food Lion or to Colonial Circle or wherever, you know, right up the street from them. So creating that additional network of additional jaunt stops and services. Unfortunately, as we talked about last month, a lot of the people aren't riding in park and ride scenarios, except for the design crossroads facility that's fairly well used up there by the hotel for people that are still utilizing some of that. But our facilities, and talking to the gentleman at Effort Baptist the other day on the night meeting, our facility at Jefferson Center at Effort Baptist Church is there's only a few bars in it. A lot of those people are doing that for the cost of gas one.
When we look at this concept plan, just for this particular building, you know, some of the things that are concerning is that concept plan looks like it just has that one road with the parking lot, but you're not going to be able to comply with fire code issues and safety issues for around that building.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is a very
rudimentary.
It's a very rudimentary drawing from Mr. Poe, the architect. They were just trying to let us know basically the opportunity for it to be on both parcels and so on. They actually, if you see the shaded parcel parking to the north of there, they're actually interested in having more layout. They're asking us about parking lot space reductions. A lot of there's people that reside here, they only have one car in multifamily market rate or, you know, overall, you know, students to middle-aged to older people, there's usually two cars. A lot of the single widowed people have one car, or a family, husband and wife, have one car. So they've asked us to look at parking lot space reductions, and we told them that would be possible. So,
well, you know, looking at what's already built there, you know, the townhouses, that the roads were not built according to the fire code, that the width aren't wide enough for those townhouses are over 30 feet high, and they would require a 26 foot wide roadway, and that's not what's there.
Okay. Yeah, so the area of the current road network that's there now is shown there, you know, as far as being the bulk and mass of these apartment complex buildings would be totally different in this drawing. So, but our goal or our thought of bringing this to you all is just to let you know that people are that serious now of trying to develop some. And then in the flip side of it, the area of, I don't have that graphic, but the area of Nahor Village, as you enter into Nahor Village, on the left, on the right-hand side is that 2.2-acre area. It's not large enough to do senior apartments or even assisted living in COVID environment now. Southern Development and the bank that owns it have indicated that they may want to do additional townhouse villas in that area. So it drives this property, phase one and two, to be even more kind of important as an opportunity. Again, we just bring this forward because it just came to us, and it just was as we were getting ready to talk about senior housing, and they've brought this idea forward for us to consider as a community.
Hopefully, this type of housing is needed. You look at all the demographics, it's needed, and it's just making sure that as we do, we do it thoughtfully and purposefully, and have all the stuff in place that facilitates these folks.
Right.
I was just going to say that I'd like to see them explore what some of the seniors could do to the modification of their houses and so forth. A lot of people don't want to relocate.
Right.
And is there any money available, like from VHDA and so forth? If you could make the houses where they live, transform it some way, then they wouldn't have to be paying rent or anything like that. And some of the houses I see in the county, they really, really need to have. I know VHDA gets into ramps and things like that, but like you were talking about the showers and so forth, mm-hmm. walk-in showers as opposed to a tub and so forth, making the kitchen more accessible, the cabinets and range safety features and so forth. I think that would be something to explore too.
Okay. Yeah, that's something that I think that the building code and the things that they're currently doing as they change into different building code cycles. They've been focusing on that more, and Andy Wills, our building official.
I saw something real interesting on television the other day, but they're speaking of let-down cabinets, where if you need something other than the kitchen cabinet, where it could just come right down, like must have like a piano hinge or something on
right.
it, and then they push it back up and it's in place.
Yep, it's right down into your lap in mm-hmm. the wheelchair or lower level.
Right.
Exactly. So, the age-in-place. I've always felt that age-in-place is the best. I mean, you see these homeless scenarios where there are caregivers that are coming in for part of the day and helping someone out. For those that may not have family that live near them. But a lot of our as Mr. Bibb indicated, the Flavanna and Louisa Housing Foundation, a lot of our nonprofits are seeking out and finding those individuals in the church groups and Habitat Humanity groups that are doing that. So, a lot of opportunities for individuals to remain in their own home. I know my oldest grandmother, my mom's mom, she lost her husband at a very young age. My grandfather passed at 71 and she lived to 88. And she chose, in her small town, where my mom grew up, to move into the senior apartments for the social aspects of it. She was in a very large four or five bedroom home that they owned that was multi-generational. Her sisters lived with her. So not everyone wants to move out of their home, but sometimes, and a lot of times, widows and such are interested in going into senior housing to get that social network. So,
we have a friend of ours is at one of the housing places in Richmond, and she pays $3,000 a month, and then they've got one down in Farmville, and theirs is $4,800 a month, I believe it is. So if you don't have any resources, a lot of the people over here don't, you're kind of limited what you can do.
Yes.
And I just want to, Mr. Johnson is actually going down my road when he's saying that, because we have to talk about affordability, whatever we're going to do. There's a word that sticks out actually on this slide to me under the second bullet, and not segregating housing by age groups.
Right.
We're in a space where the world just went through a crisis, and our older generations have had to depend on some of the younger folks who are in medical care, who are have the strength to lift people out of their situations and not afraid and healthy enough to go through these processes. And so we, in my mind, what I would be looking for is a place that allows, yes, we want to take care of our seniors. We also want to take care of folks who already are here, who haven't gotten to that place yet, and those who seek to come here. I don't like the idea of any exclusionary, because regardless of who we're talking about, people got to be able to afford it. $4,000 a month to pay a place. People have lost their jobs. Life has thrown curveballs for everybody. When we talk about the jaunt system and people not knowing that, you know, they can use jaunt to cat, life has thrown a wrench that people haven't been used to. There are some people who are caught in that situation who may have access to social media, who may have had access to a car, and they're actually in a position to say, look, we're going to sell this car, keep this one, but what about the people who didn't even have a vehicle to begin with?
Right.
And so I just, for me, as a citizen of Savannah County, you know, as we are part of decision-making, that we look at affordability all the way around, because this goes right back to my point about affordable housing that I've been talking about all along. Whether we talk about tiny houses like they're doing in Louisa, or where Green is doing some different things, and you know, all the things that the TDJCP is doing, all of this stuff, we have to have real talks about what we talk about affordable. And then we can't be afraid to mix people together. If you don't want to live over here, you're not going to buy a place over here. We still have to create an atmosphere that gives everybody those options. And, you know, more and more, I mean, I don't know when the last time, you know, folks have gone to Richmond. More or less, people are looking for that atmosphere that you can walk everywhere you need to go. That's how you stay healthy, right? You can put in your legs to work. You don't have to spend money on gas if you can walk to the Food Lion or Walmart or whatever. So for me, I don't want it just to be a focus on seniors. I want to go back to the place where we had the sheet and we were talking about the multi-generational center. It, to me, it doesn't serve the purpose or the intent. If we have a multi-generational center that all of these people who don't have cars, who are limited on funds to pay for the house that they've been living in for 25 years and still afford that, then they can't even get up here to the multi-generational center. When if we build, considering some people, they live, what, two states away from their grandkids. It's nice to see a little kid running around. But you build a community that represents everybody. And you need to respect people when you have, you know, the HOAs and the property ownership and all of that. You set some ground rules. But for me, that would be important, because then when we get back into what Mr. Lacomasino talked about in terms of medical care, those services, you know, we have all these volunteers who have maybe retired. So making sure that those people know things like CPR, they know things like Narcan, they know things that are relative to just life living. If we can't put all of those necessities right in front of them, they have the tools that make them necessary. And then I would say we, or whoever is responsible, to find out from those volunteers, how are the folks that do know about these services, how did they become aware? Because that means we still have X amount of people that don't know that these services are available. So I think we need to be looking at that. And is there going to be another option besides jaunt to provide services? Because people who have never rode public transportation, you mean tell me they're going to drive or ride 45 minutes from here to get to Charlottesville for something that they need? Some people are not doing that. So those would be what my concerns are, because at some point I will be in that position. But I would want a community where I can interact like I'm interacting with everybody in this room. I would want that.
You know, the bad thing about blue collar workers and so forth like that. But to ask people who got older, people have come in there and changed those houses and made them. So it's actually an apartment I lived in when my wife and I first got married on Poplar Street. And I paid $80 a month rent, including utilities. And then it went to $85 a month, so forth like that. That house today, it used to have a place where I lived in the middle part, and it had upstairs to it. Somebody else rented. Well, today that house is worth $700,000. It's been changed into one house and all forth like that. So, you know, that's what's changed a lot. So, and the bad part about it, when you get into a rural county like we are, it's so spaced out. It's kind of hard to, and you know what happened in Fort Union, the business are leaving and so forth like that. So it's kind of difficult because a lot of people now want more than what we had when we were growing up. We just wanted our needs and not more about wants. A lot of people now want the wants. They want everything provided right there at the same spot. Sometimes you can't do that.
And the only other thing I would say, Mr. Chairman, is that one of the things that concerns me is that people look for a place like Fluvanna to come to a place that there's not a lot of traffic and things going on. And then once they get settled, it's like nobody else can come.
Yeah. Not in my backyard.
You know, when you have originally maybe two houses somewhere, and those people who did the applications got whatever they wanted, and they're building for their family, and then when it's other people's turn, we try to justify why people shouldn't have those rights when the things that were there all along still exist. And so I just want us to be careful that we don't use things that to keep everybody from an opportunity to have the kind of life that they presume people have here, you know, Fluvanna. That would be my request, that we, you know, a no that we're looking at. It makes sense. It don't feel, it just isn't a feel good thing just because I grew up here, I lived here all my life, and this is where my family's from. Every family wants safety and security. They want to be able to afford their houses, and they want to be able to spend time with their family and friends. Why can't everybody have that? And that, to me, would sum up what we are trying to do, whether it's for seniors, the young families that's coming in, or whatever that looks like. That would be what I would say.
Right. Yeah, because as seniors do, if they choose to leave their homes and go into a different living environment, the younger families are coming in into the lake and into Fluvanna overall, taking that available housing, because it's just that tight of a market right now. So if something goes up for sale, and like 3 days later, it's on contract mandate.
I guess I'm always concerned about the money, but what price range are you thinking about for these, you know, roughly for these seniors would have to pay? Because some of these people are only getting like $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you get into these things, you've got utility, don't get me wrong, I'm 100% for it,
right.
But I just am concerned, is it going to work where there'll be, in other words, you pay what you can, and then somebody's going to help you out along the way, because you build one of these new units, and look at the cost of things, you've got to get a certain amount. And the thing about it, we might build this and find out that local people can't afford it, and we end up with a bunch of people from out of state because Fluvanna's a nice place to come.
Yeah, now they actually, this group actually does a really strong marketing effort before they even selected this property. They already knew kind of what their target market was.
I don't think a lot of people realize what a lean budget, if there's such a thing. I mean, some of these people have got very little bit to live on.
Right. Yeah,
they pay their light bill, and of course gasoline is going up and everything, and they have less and less disposable income.
That's correct. And, so basically, you know, had they not had like these 18 other developments that they've done over the last 30 years, and they actually maintain them and take care of them once they build them. They don't turn it over to an apartment rental management group. And so, but Chairman, we're about out of time, so.
About 5 more minutes and so forth like that. I've mentioned that the price of building right now is going sky high. A sheet of plywood right now is around $37. So you think about when you start building a house and you start paying $37 for one sheet of plywood.
Yeah.
Plywood. But, so that's going to make Columbus difficult when you're building these things, because if they're going to get their money back out of it or make a profit, the only way that you could do is a lot of, if non-profit type people got involved and so forth like that. But we've got to consider all the factors, like Mr. Lagosino said, we've got to have medical and all of that type of stuff. Fire and so forth got to be, especially in age communities like that and so forth like that. So anyway, we only have about 4 minutes left. So anybody have a quick comment?
The other thing that I would say, all this discussion is to inform the comprehensive plan. And the comprehensive plan needs to look at all factors in. No one page of the comprehensive plan stands by itself. It's all intertwined. So we need to look at data, EMS data. What type of calls are they running? Citizen surveys. What do the citizens want? What are they willing to support? And I'm not talking about tax dollars. I'm talking about actually using these facilities and buying into these facilities. We need to know that as we develop this plan.
Since we only actually have a couple of minutes, one thing I would want to ask, and this may be what the Board of Supervisors may know, you see things like Xfinity and some of these other, like, internet companies and, coming in to do things in areas, and it just seems like they always do the stuff in the big cities, right? Where here we have students that still need to be in school. We have our seniors that's not aware of all of the opportunities that's available to them, when really it's at the click of a phone. So how basic is the needs that we need to be ethically correct?
Central Virginia Electric has a subdivision called the Firefly now that's installing internet in most to all of their customers and so forth. Matter of fact, in my area, it'll be available this summer. Like that. Matter of fact, they've been on my property putting in stuff recently and stuff like that. But we need to bring this to an end, because we only have 2 more minutes left before we need to start our regular meeting. So I'm basically going to end the work session at this time. We will reopen the regular session at 7 o'clock.
Already now.
Now 7 o'clock, we'll be open the regular session of the Planning Commission for March 9th, 2021. First order of business is the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Next item on our agenda is the Community Development Director's Report. Mr. Bob.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Bibb. Go ahead and so a lot of the items that I'm going to bring up before you tonight are some of your cases that are coming before public hearing sessions tonight as well. Our technical review committee and neighborhood meeting. So the February 11th technical review committee meeting, we met with Cunningham Solar, which is the CBEC property located over at the Cunningham substation on South Boston. And that request to construct the 5 megawatt solar energy facility coming before you tonight. They held the neighborhood meeting Thursday, February 25th, and conducted that neighborhood meeting.
additional neighborhood meetings that were held that same day, or some of the other cases that are coming before you, the Colonial Circle Car Wash and Gas Station SUP request, that neighborhood meeting was conducted. Some questions raised about it were pedestrian access, new roundabout crosswalks and extended sidewalks. So again, what we were just talking about with walkable communities is right in the very forefront of this first part of Colonial Circle for development. And then just down the road from there on Lake Monticello Road is the Christian and Associates Excavating. The neighborhood meeting was also conducted, indicating that the property had already achieved a VDOT entrance permit and site for development, and really we did not have any comments at all other than an adjacent property owner did notify me that week that they were in support of the request prior to not being able to attend the neighborhood meeting and just wanted to indicate their support. And moving on and getting the rest of the planning commissioners and the public update. Get some people in there.
I can't have understand what they're saying.
The transportation subcommittee meeting, Ms. Bethel Fellow did present some information with our subcommittee on intersection analysis work that she's been doing along Route 15 and 53. Additional comments from Chief Abbott from the Lake and Major Wiles from our Sheriff's Department. Some of the analysis did include Route 53 and Birds and Lake Road intersection with sight distance and banking issues due to the curvature there of the road and the fast traffic that comes through there and traffic delays during peak periods that we've heard from residents and business owners in that area. One of the ones that she focused on a lot at that point was the Monish Road gate, the Tufton gate there onto 53. She's researched up to 15 crashes in the last 2 years there due to that sloped gate and entrance condition into Route 53. We also turned the focus more to some discussions of Route 15 at Union Mills Road. As you drop to the bottom of the hill there, a lot of right turn movements are occurring going the majority of the lake traffic, utilizing that road and not continuing on down 15. Troy Road, right there at the post office, that's one that's had some road grade issues and lack of a left turn. There's a lot of traffic that will take that route onto Troy Road and come up into the Zion Crossroads area in 250 towards Charlottesville. Just to remind everyone, that intersection was a 2018 VDOT Smart Scale project. Scored on safety measures and enhancement scores through that process. The Zion Crossroads stakeholders community quarter plan was discussed on February 25th. It was really the first meeting we had in quite a while due to COVID, and it was an opportunity for Kittleson and Associates to go over some of their phase two transportation planning analysis. A good portion of that meeting was discussing some of the Louisa County intersections on 15, just north of the I-64 interchange. The thing that came out of the meeting, and they're still working on this, but they're really unsure at this point how to solve some of the crossover traffic issues that are at the McDonald's and Burger King area and the convenience stores due to the interchange and the DDI coming right out of there, the median. And currently, there's numerous access points there that don't line up. So I think Louisa County has been working with Chuck Proctor and VDOT to kind of get some additional thought process. That being said, a follow-up meeting will be conducted to work with Savannah County staff to discuss our actual Route 254 intersections. And some of that information will be provided by Sandy Jackal for Thursday at 11 o'clock. And then additional planning will occur for that. So that's what I have for you all as a report tonight. Chairman Bill, thank you.
Thank you. If I have any questions, thank you. The next item on our agenda is the first of two public comment sections. It will be limited to 5 minutes per speaker. It is not for items scheduled for a public hearing, any other items. The public hearings tonight are, there are four of those, that Stephen L. and Cody Peters, two for Christian Associates Excavating and Cunningham Solar. So anyone wishing to speak on any other items, state your name, address, and you will be limited to 5 minutes.
My name is Linda Stager, and do I have permission to speak, Chairman Bibb?
Yes.
My address is 2949 Ridge Road, Palmyra, Virginia. I'm speaking today to ask for consideration of a moratorium on rural cluster subdivisions in Savannah County. As I'm sure you're all aware, the Code of Virginia Section 15.2-2286.1 provides that counties allow subdivision in residential and agricultural regions up to 40% of the area of the county designated that way. If that were to happen, that would be a gigantic change in the characteristic environment of this county. I know that the pace of development in the county has been a subject of discussion for a very, very long time. Just as recently as the latest citizen survey administered and compiled by Ms. Belanger Harris, there are comments on the extent to which housing development is occurring or should occur. My personal feeling is that growth is necessary and inevitable, but should be done slowly and deliberately. And a feeling shared, according to my impression of reading the comments from the survey, by many of those who participated from all districts in the county. This issue has significant impact on the fiscal health of our county, inasmuch as the great burden of taxation has fallen on the individual landowners. And there is a squeeze between the amount citizens will tolerate to pay and the amount needed to pay for the necessary services to maintain order, to provide governance, to manage finances, to promote health and safety, to educate children. Whereas we need a focus on development of business, which could provide a tax base from a group that is not as heavy a consumer of services. On the other hand, people have to have a place to live. If they have a place to live in our county, but yet there is no work here, there's no factory, no white collar firm, no private business, then they'll work elsewhere, take their money elsewhere. So as you are also likely aware, the code requires that counties comply with many stipulations in a way that result in undesirable outcomes and unhappy citizens. However, it only requires counties to comply if they have had 10% growth rate from one census to the next. That brings us to the point of the census. We're waiting for that information, which, according to my review from the Census Bureau today, might be as long as September away. This is regarding not only our subjection to the subdivision law, but even our voting districts. So we have been discussing the redistricting, et cetera, and Ms. Harris has done an estimate of population, which she reached about 10.5% growth in the last decade, which would require us to comply with the state law. But she based her estimate not on housing as of April 1, which is the date the census looks at, but on the entirety of 2020, and assuming even slope of growth in the last 10 years, and if that population figure is adjusted to only include the first quarter of 2020, then our county grew at a rate below 10%. This is the main point I want to make. If our county grew at a rate below 10%, then we're not required to follow the state law to allow rural cluster subdivisions. It is my belief that going forward, Fluvanna County may be in a position to refuse rural cluster subdivision till the next census in 2030. So tonight I am asking the commission to take a step. I want you to vote and recommend to delay or prevent application for rural cluster subdivisions until the census results are reported, which might be August or September, or who even knows. Thank you for the time to speak.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak at this time?
I would like to speak.
State your name and address, please.
Lois Falls. Let me see if I can turn this off.
Close your browser, please.
I live at 331 Oak Creek Road in Palmyra, Virginia. And my land is adjacent to Mr. Miller's subdivision plan. Do I have permission to speak, sir?
Yes, you do. That is not an item on our public hearing tonight.
Do I have permission to speak, sir?
Yes.
She's muted herself.
Yeah.
She turned on there, I guess.
You keep muting yourself, but you are given permission to speak because
that's not. Do I have permission to speak?
Yes, ma'am. Don't mute yourself again, okay? Are you there?
It's no longer muted, sir.
Yes, ma'am. You're able to speak.
I can't hear anything.
You keep mute. She's muted herself again.
Yeah. Turned off her browser volume, and I think she's muting herself.
She's got her eye. She's coming in with her iPhone.
Everybody else is muted also.
Ms. Falls, unmute yourself, please.
That's better. Do I have permission to speak now? Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. That item is not on the public.
Okay.
You're limited 5 minutes.
Thank you, sir. So I have written a letter and I have issued it to everyone, so everyone knows pretty much what I would have to say. Mine is much more introspective and narrow in scope. I'm just focusing largely on how this rural cluster subdivision immediately adjacent to my house would affect me. And I am concerned that it's grown from 15 to 18, it's now at 20 houses. And I am also concerned about the water situation, which we have spoken about before. Fluvanna County has many dry seasons, as in 2002 when a lot of wells dried up. I'm wondering if the ultimate situation might not be that the county would have to provide water for this subdivision that's planned here in Palmyra if these wells do dry up. I'm also concerned about the septic and the drainage system, which is essentially an untested system, and it really concerns me that we are going to test this system in the middle of 20 new homes, each with a well, and each home on about 0.35 acres, when we don't really know if this septic tank system is going to work or not work. And so I really implore this group and the Planning Commission to at least consider to significantly decrease the density of these homes, the wells that are going up, and if we can restrict each home to 2 acres in this A1 zoned rural area, I would like to have Mr. Miller pipe this water in for himself and pay for that so that the county citizens, as well as the county administration, does not at some point in the future have to arrange and pay for and be taxed to accommodate Mr. Miller's plan for this rural cluster subdivision. I would also like to require that Mr. Miller oversee and maintain his experimental septic and drainage system that was designed by him and approved by him for 10 years into the future after 90% of these homes are sold, rather than the current 5-year requirement, because this is an experiment. I really wonder about the wet years that we have in addition to the dry years. Dry years would dry up the well. Wet years could prevent the drainage into the soil that he's hoping is going to work. And I would like for him to assume the responsibility of this for at least 10 years into the future so that this does not affect my land immediately and contaminate my well and my soil. I have lived in this home for 34 years. I've worked for 42 years and my life as a nurse. I've worked so hard to own this place. I've been working to restore it and improve it. I've spent every dollar that I have trying to make this work, and I'm feeling pretty threatened actually by these 20 homes that will come right down my land, so that children will play in my woods, there'll be trash on my property, not to mention the light and the noise pollution. I also would like to require that he at least put an earth diversion berm that's parallel to my property so that the water drains back toward his property, not toward mine, in addition to his silt fence that I suppose he'll have to put up. I would also like to have a result of the perk test, the original perk test, to see if that is why we are using this particular type of drainage and septic system that he has chosen. I've never used the word lawsuit in my entire life. I'm 66 years old, but I have worked so hard, and I'm feeling a little pushed in the corner about this entire process, so that if my well dries up and is contaminated, if my land is contaminated, if the trash, the stench, whatever happens that creates a situation so that I can't stay in my home and I cannot sell, then I'm wondering if I even have an alternative but to threaten a lawsuit, which I don't even believe in. I don't even like lawsuits. Sir, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to speak? State your name and address, please.
I would like to speak, sir.
Go ahead. State your name and your address, please.
My name is Susan Schofield. I live at 111 Fairview Lane in Palmyra, right across the street from Mr. Miller's proposed development. And I would like to echo what Lois has said, and that I'm very concerned that these wells are going to dry up. I was under the impression that Mr. Miller was going to have to drill some test wells. I was hoping you could update us on that. I haven't heard anything further about those test wells and what they've found out, or even where they are drilling or going to drill. That was his, I'm very interested in knowing that. I understand there's a nonprofit going on, and I also understand that those investors to that nonprofit are not here this evening, but I would definitely like to say something to you all about, I understand that you all have the power to limit this project even further, and that we really are concerned. There are so many of us still, many are not able to be here this evening, but so many of us are concerned still about these wells and these homes that are still being considered on these sheer cliffs almost on that side of the development. Now, I understand the grade is considerably steep, and I would like to ask that the members of the Planning Commission actually go out and look at this land that this proposed site wants, that Mr. Miller wants to build on. I really do hope that you use your power to limit what Mr. Miller can do here. And thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak at this time, state your name and address, please.
I would like to speak.
Name and address, please.
Marty Foster, 783 Courthouse Road in Palmyra.
You'll be limited to 5 minutes.
Okay. I'm so unhappy about this development that at Ballinger Bluff. And today I was driving down 53, and all the trees in this county seem to be coming down. I don't know if the Planning Commission is the place to talk about this. Maybe it's the Board of Supervisors. But I agree with what the first speaker said about there needs to be a moratorium on all this destruction of our land, our rural way of life. And when Mr. Miller bought this land, it's my understanding that he didn't even talk to the neighbors about what he was going to use it for. I guess there is a by right law that you can do whatever you want with your land, but that doesn't seem fair to me, to the current citizens that are living next to this development, or this proposed development. And I'm just hoping that there's some way you can direct me on how we can stop in the future these things from happening. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? State your name and address, please.
My name is Liz Palmer McKenzie. Do I have permission to speak, please?
Yes, ma'am. You'll be limited to 5 minutes.
Yes, sir. I live at 1384 Courthouse Road, almost directly catty cornered from the new development at Ballinger Bluff. And I'm going to echo the previous speakers, but I'd also like to add that the concentration of wells there is more so than the phase two project. And if we don't have enough, if we don't have enough water for the neighbors that are here, Trissy Treadway has already had all kinds of problems with her wells. The people across the street have had problems. We've had problems. We've already had to have ours refilled. And it concerns me that we're going to put 20 wells in an area where there simply is no water. And as Lois stated, either we have dry spells and everything dries up, or we have wet spells and everything floods on a very steep, on a very steep slope. And what I would consider a terrible area to build. And also in September of 2011, we had an earthquake which affected my house. It moved my house up a little bit off the foundation. And if these poor people move into this house, they have the right to expect water, and they have the right to expect safety. And Ballinger Bluff can't promise either of those. And I would just ask that the board look at those facts and put themselves both in our shoes and our the potential new neighbor's shoes and think about whether you would want to be in the position of your well possibly drying up because of new neighbors, or whether or not you would want to move into a house and only find that you've had this investment and it's not safe to live there. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? State your name and address, please. Seeing no one.
I would like to speak. My name is Jenny Lynn Walding, and I live at 11 Locksport in Palmyra, Virginia. I am referencing the special use permit for the new car wash and gas station there right off of Route 53.
Mr. Chairman, this is out of order.
That, ma'am, you can't do that because that's a public hearing. You'll be able to speak at the public hearing. This is items, as I stated, as we did this, for any other items other than public hearing items.
I apologize with bed times. I did miss the beginning entry.
Ma'am, you can speak while I do the public hearing. I will open the public hearing during that time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak on any item that's not a public hearing item, please state your name and address, please. With no one else coming forward, we will end the public comment section, the first of two tonight, and go on to the rest of our agenda tonight. The next item on our agenda is the approval of the February 9th meeting. Does anybody have any comments about the minutes from the 29th meeting, the 9th of February meeting, 2021? If not, do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion to be approved as written.
Okay, we have a motion to approve by Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second? Have a second by Mary Key. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0 and one absent. Okay, the next item is public hearings. The first item is SUP 2003, Stephen L. and Cody Peters.
Yes, good evening, Chairman Bibb, members of the commission. Before you, we have the SUP 2003, it's Stephen L. Cody C. Peters. This is the car wash and gas station special use permit request. This property is located at the New Colonial Circle roundabout at 53 and Lake Monticello Road. Location of the proposed special use permit at the intersection at the entrance of the New Colonial Circle development in the R3 zoning district. This was the overall property. To orientate you again, the proposal is generally in this front portion of the development of Colonial Circle at this time. Is a request, the by right use, the neighborhood convenience retail store in the R3 district that would serve the Colonial Circle planned community and the surrounding community. That is part of the R3 residential plan community aspects. However, in R3 district, some of the higher commercial automobile type uses, such as the commercial car wash and the gas sales for gasoline, diesel, and eventually electric vehicle charging stations if they choose for service would be what the request is for the special use permit. Some of the recommended conditions for this request, the site development plan submittal would be required if they achieve the rezoning, or excuse me, the special use permit
through the Planning Commission and Board. This is part of the Colonial Circle Master Plan development, so site screening from view of any dumpster enclosures or other type of activities in this commercial development area. Would be part of that site lighting, eliminating only the area for the commercial area, and then screening and providing additional protection of the apartments that would be in behind of their development. Any site noise would be in compliance with the noise ordinance administered by the sheriff and the zoning office. The applicant, have actually asked for condition 5 that's part of the staff report not to be imposed. They feel that they have the site being maintained in an even and orderly manner. That is one of our standard conditions that we do recommend. I would remind the commission and the public that a special use permit is something that runs with the land and the property, and this could be 20 or 30 years in the future for operations, so we want to have at that time, if there are any concerns, that ability to make sure that the property is well maintained. Site also is a condition will be inspected by county and state staff as needed, and our standard condition of the board could revoke it due to lack of site compliance with these stated conditions. So to remind you tonight, I'm providing updates relative to the staff recommendations, and then the applicant actually has some PowerPoint slides that they would like to present, Chairman Biv, after my presentation. We can proceed with their request, sir.
Yes, would the applicant come forward and with your presentation at this time, please?
Hi, Chairman Biv and members of the Planning Commission. My name is Kelsey Schwein, and I'll be presenting this application to you tonight. So as I said, my name is Kelsey. I'm a planner with Chimp Engineering. I'm here tonight representing the owner and applicant, Stephen Peters, for his request to establish a gas station and car wash on an approximately 3-acre portion of this 60-acre property that is zoned R3 master plan residential. Can we go back one slide real quick? Well, and I guess Doug was already hit on the site context, but just drawing attention there to the portion shaded in light orange, that is the approximately 3-acre portion where the gas station and car wash is proposed. So moving on to the next slide, please. So here you can see that we have the gas pumps shown along the front and the side of the building, as well as a automated car wash bay kind of to the southwest of the building. Douglas already did an excellent job in the staff report bringing attention to the fact that a neighborhood convenience store is a by right use in the R3 district. However, the gas pumps, the gas station aspect, and the car wash are not. And so although we could establish a convenience store by right, we do feel that a car wash and a gas station would be a productive use of this land and a welcome addition to the Fluvanna County business community. Next slide, please. So here you can see the zoning and context map. The property is that R3 zone property there. Thank you for highlighting that. And you can kind of see along the Lake Monticello corridor, there's a few pockets of business activity with the Fluvanna Self Storage and Clopton Plaza. And we really see that this portion of the property kind of serving as an anchor business point to the remainder of the Lake Monticello corridor. The front portion, as many of you all are aware, and you all participated in the meetings back in 2019 for the rezoning of this property to R3 Master Plan, the front portion of this property, about a dozen acres or so, is designated for business use. And so future businesses It's the hope that they will take shape on this site. This is kind of just the initial spark for a business plan on this property. Next slide, please. Just showing the comprehensive plan here, and that the property is within a designated growth area of Louisiana County. Next slide. So this is the entirety of the Colonial Circle Master Plan, and you can see highlighted in red the approximately 3-acre portion of the property where we are proposing to build the gas station and car wash, and how that fits in to the rest of the site. Just as a refresher, this property was rezoned to R3 back in 2019, but going even further back to 2015, and about 15 acres of this property was rezoned to B1 business commercial, which would allow for a gas station and car wash by right. I think kind of in some initial conversations with local businesses and working through the viability of this site and how it would work as just a 15-acre business opportunity, we really received a lot of feedback that some more rooftops would contribute significantly to the viability of the business. And so that's why back in 2019, we brought you the proposal for viewing the 60-acre property more holistically as a mixed-use development. Next slide. And just going back to the site plan here for a minute, I should mention one thing that is not shown on the plan, which is your very robust landscape ordinance, which I think it would be helpful for everyone to visually see that. But Louisiana County does have a very robust landscape ordinance, which requires street trees, screening shrubs, and I think that will just really contribute to how you know how the site is viewed from Route 53 and Route 618 when you're coming through the roundabout there. Next slide. So this slide here, it may be difficult to see for some of you. I just wanted to draw attention to the fact that the proposed entrances is shown on the site plan do comply with VDOT standards for entrance spacing. There was a few questions raised at the TRC meeting about whether or not these entrances were in compliance with those established VDOT standards. And so this is just demonstrating that we meet those. With the direct entrance to the site is a restricted right-in, right-out only. And then further down 53, that is proposed as a full access entrance. However, all spacing proposed does comply with VDOT standards. And that will continue to be evaluated, and the geometric design of all the entrances will be continually evaluated for compliance with VDOT standards if this project moves forward, and honestly, as the project as a whole for the R3 master plan development continues to move forward. And just briefly touching on traffic, because I'm very aware that that is definitely always a concern with a gas station or car wash use. With these particular uses, from every study that I've seen and come across, approximately 70 to 80%, in some cases 90% of the trips that are going to a gas station use are considered pass-by trips, which means that they are already trips that are on the road. A gas station is not a destination use, whereas an office or a school or somewhere where you go for a destination, the grocery store, for example, this is a use that you stop for convenience on your way to your destination. So typically we see that these are not great traffic drivers. They're just capturing existing traffic on the road. And additionally, there was a traffic study done for this property back with the 2019 R3 master plan submittal. And although a gas station wasn't specifically called out in that traffic plan, the traffic analysis did analyze the impact from 425 homes in addition to the 81,000 commercial square feet proposed on the R3 development. And the R3 development has been reduced to 325 homes. So I'm just bringing attention to the fact that although the gas station wasn't specifically evaluated, the traffic study anticipated exactly 100 more homes than are actually going to be built on this site. And that traffic study was reviewed previously with the rezoning request, and it was reviewed again by VDOT with the special use permit request. Next slide, please. So that's all that I have for you tonight. We are agreeable to all conditions proposed by staff, except for, as Douglas said, condition 5. We feel that condition is very subjective and would be difficult to enforce in the future. Additionally, Savannah County's ordinance, like I said, the landscape ordinance is incredibly robust. You guys have effectively a dark skies ordinance in place for your lighting plan. You have requirements for screening of parking lots. The ordinance itself promotes neat and orderly development. And so we do feel that you already have the regulations in place to ensure that the development is neat and orderly for its entirety in the future. Thank you all very much. I'm available for any questions that you may have.
Does anybody at the commission have any questions for the applicant or Mr. Miles, either one? No questions. We'll open the public hearing at this time. Anyone want to speak about this proposal here? State your name and address, and you will be limited to 5 minutes.
Hi there. I would like to speak. Your permission?
State your name and address, please.
Jenny Lynn Walling at 11 Locks Court, Palmyra, Virginia.
Thank you.
So, thank you very much, Kelsey. I know we've spoken in the past, and I was also on the previous TRC meeting. One of the things that I just want to highlight is everything that you show on those drawings do not showcase a school. It's literally right on the opposite of that roundabout. So when we reference, different lexicon regarding, destinations and toing and froing, that school is a full year round school. And so there is already so much traffic backed up regarding from the gate, from Lake Monticello, we have around the roundabout, and now we're also adding these apartment or condominium complexes, that to have this gas station so close to a roundabout, all I see is disaster. I fear about pedestrian crossings. I fear for the safety of the students, for the parents that are picking up and dropping off of the kids. This is a private school. There is no busing, so this is strictly all parent cars that are coming, along with the teachers. I have 2 students that attend Effort, and also, again, I'm a Lake Monticello resident. When I spoke with Kelsey, I had asked about market research stating if there was even a need to support another gas station and car wash when we have 2-4 miles directly from this location in both directions. One right across from Food Line, which is the BP, and then there's another BP right by Ace Hardware, which is very underpopulated. There's never anybody using the car bay or the car wash bay. And I also have reached out to John C. Wilson with VDOT regarding speed data to reference the amount of travel in which people, the speeds that they travel, and I have not received any data regarding that. To me, that would highlight if that would be a safety issue regarding people speeding on the roundabout and then going directly into a gas station. Thank you for letting me speak. That is all I have. But again, as a parent and as a resident, I'm very concerned about this.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak about this at this time? State your name and your address, please. no one else coming forward, we'll end the public hearing at this time.
Sorry, I would like to speak for just a moment. My name is Jason Berg. I'm the administrator for Effort Baptist Church and Effort Christian School and Preschool, 7820 Thomas Jefferson Parkway, Palmyra, Virginia.
Okay, you were limited to 5 minutes.
Thank you. As our church council has spoken, we have wholeheartedly supported this development, and the developer and the owner of the property have been very forthcoming in their plans. I do have one concern. Would it be possible to pull up the visual of the entrances and exits?
Yeah.
Just a moment.
Okay, so the entrance, the right in, right out entrance there off of Route 53, thank you for circling that. My concern there is, like many other VDOT developments, while this meet VDOT standards, if just thinking in Palmyra, at the Turkey Sag Shopping Center, the west entrance by the Atlantic Union Bank going into Foodland, people constantly turn right in or turn left in out of there. They have to put up bollards. They're frequently just run over. And it's quite an ugly sight. The other issue is that in other instances in Albemarle County where I live, I can speak for the Shagwell store, which I drive by every day on my way to Effort Church, and they've had to put up, again, ugly bollards to stop people from turning right in and turning left out. So I think there has to be a better design solution, potentially going back as far as the crossover where the island is in the middle, to move it back there, prevent people turning right in over top of the island. But to stop people turning right out throughout several parts of places in Virginia, these don't work unless they are designed properly with long extensions on either end to prevent people from doing exactly what we don't want them to do, which could cause further problems with the traffic circle.
Thank you.
An effort we've known for some time, long before Mr. Peters had spoken with us, that a gas station, part of the B1 zoning, which I think, and Kelsey, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think part of the B1 zoning and traffic circle included, that study included, the volume would be included with the gas station. So we applaud the gas station going in. We think it's a needed use addition to the community, but also that it is far enough away from Effort. It's on the other side of the traffic circle, and with the planned lighting and planned landscaping, we think this will not even be visible for most of our campus.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak about this? State your name and your address, please. No one coming forward. We will end the public hearing at this time and go to discussion by the Planning Commission.
So, Mr. Chair, I have two questions. One of my questions was where the line was drawn through the conditions of neat and orderly, and the developer was saying that that was already part of the expectation. Was that line drawn out on purpose? Site shall be maintained in a neat and orderly manner. I'm just trying to pick up where they're asking that number 5 be excluded. I'm not following where that is.
Right, yeah, this is Marty. That was to indicate that the applicant was not in, but the special use permit, normally we're trying to get the applicant to agree to the conditions that the Planning Commission is recommending to the board. And that was one that they indicated after receiving the staff report that they felt was not something they would like to accept. And we actually indicated that's been our standard condition in most SUPs. this point for several years, and our argument as staff for leaving it in would be that long-term process and conditions for enforcement purposes, if that were ever needed. However, as Shemp Engineering has indicated for their client, the Colonial Circle master plan development and some of the requirements that are there are available to maintain the neat and orderly manner aspects. However, we do feel that in code enforcement, there normally is sometimes the lifespan of the commercial conditions, the commercial owners association may not be in place 20 or 30 years from now. This gas station may be now 30 years old, and we have concerns with it. So we felt that it was necessary to at least consider leaving it in your consideration.
I as listened to her presentation, I still think it should stay in there, but what her explanation was in the fact was it's subject what neat and orderly may be to one person is may be subjective to someone else. But my opinion is I think it should be left in and so forth like that, because we normally make sure that things like this are taken care of.
I agree. What of is that? 20 or 30 years from that, we want it to be neat and orderly. What of it?
When we did, actually, back in 2015, when we zoned this to be B1, this was one of the actual projects that were talked about, that was the one project that they wanted to become B1. So this has been in the works for a long, long time.
Isn't that a lot across the road there from the church? That's not long ago that was zoned B1, wasn't it? It was going to be a shopping center.
This is that piece of property.
Okay.
And they changed it to R3 in 2019.
Oh, okay.
I guess my concern is just making sure that under the Colonial Circle project, that it can't be opt out that, okay, the gas station was separate through zoning, whatever, you know, we want that area on all areas of the county to stay neat and clean. And in my opinion, that doesn't seem much to ask for.
Well, we have the option to leave it in.
And so in that case, and then I don't know if this is where that question is asked. Is this a 24-hour gas station, or do we know how is this thing operated?
I believe most of them are in this scenario. Ms. Sean, could you answer that? The zoning doesn't dictate the hours of operation, shift work, time frame. They can be 24/7. However, most of the time, the existing Exxon station owned by the market at Jefferson Center area, they do close. However, this is a much higher volume traffic area, so I don't think that we even know the branding of this convenience store at this point. But I'll leave that up to Ms. Lina from Shemp Engineering.
Right. I just want to confirm the question. The question was about hours of operation.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Is it 24 hours, or do you know any of that yet? I was just curious.
Yeah, so we have not restricted that at this point, so it could be 24 hours. There is nothing in the zoning ordinance prohibited, from it being that. But I will say these uses are typically, the store is open from 5 a.m. to 11 p.m., and then the gas pumps and the car wash are operational 24 hours.
Thank you, ma'am. And then, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, my last question is going back to Mr. Bird. He was talking about the ballards or whatever you call those. Are there other options, or do we know what other options would be in terms of the turns in and out of the area that people wouldn't run over and still cause a crash? I'm just curious.
Let me comment on that. That's a site plan issue.
Gotcha.
What the design of the entrance should be is really up to VDOT. And there probably, I'm sure there are alternatives that can do various things. But clearly, the speaker is correct. correct, but if you're going to have a limit on entrances and exits and things like that, you want to make sure they're effective. So I think that goes without saying, but that's not really a subject for this conversation.
That's what I mean.
Unless you think, for example, that you can't have that entrance. I didn't hear that being mentioned.
And that's what I was trying to get at by asking that question, just to be clear on how does that impact what we
Yes, at the time of the technical review committee, Mr. John Wilson from VDOT did confirm with all of us that the entrances are warranted and designed correctly. And that's why Shemp Engineering provided that red spacing, red spacing requirements for everyone's information to understand that Mr. Wilson, Land Use Engineer, has looked at that. But Mr. Payne is correct. We would look at some other alternatives if there were at the time of site plan for better safety and traffic control measures.
That's all my question.
No more discussion by the Planning Commission. Do I have a motion?
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of SUP 20-03, a request to permit both car wash and gas station uses with respect to 60.9 plus minus acres of tax map 8, section A, parcel A14A, subject to the 6 conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay. I have a motion by Ms. Mary Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 401 absent.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is Christian and Associates Excavating. The first is ZMP 2101. That's also an SUP 2101. I don't know whether we can do them both at the same time or do we have to separate them?
You should take action separately, but I assume that a lot of the same considerations are going to apply to both projects.
So we can have the presentation for both, but have to. I know we have to vote on them separately.
Yeah, I don't see any reason you can't present them together. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we do have the zoning request, ZMP 2101 and SUP 2101, both of Christian and Associates. Excavating for a contractor's shop and storage yard. This is just located a little further down from where we just sat at Colonial Circle on Lake Monticello Road. And the request is located just west of the Village Oaks rezoning that you all did this past fall from Village Oaks Phase 4, right there at River Run Drive. On the north side of Lake Monticello Road, and Mr. Christian has owned this property for quite some time. Mr. Christian also resides on this parcel here, just behind the proposed rezoning and special use permit request. Just a little closer look at, I'm sorry, I'm going to go back. This quarter, as Ms. Schlein mentioned earlier, is starting to have more neighborhood and B1 and BC commercial zoning occurring and forming that synergy or area for business uses and services. And so Mr. Christian has come forward after the Village Oaks rezoning and is asking for this request for his contractor storage yard facility for his business use that is currently located outside the county and is looking to return it to Savannah County. This area here is that you see in this vicinity here is the Savannah self storage phase 2 that is shown, and then this is the proposed entrance that's located here, and Ms. Schlein will expand upon in her presentation. As this being a B1 rezoning, the applicant has proffered out some of higher B1 uses that we usually look for, including some such as automobile repair, RV sales and service, fast food restaurants, which are higher traffic generators in amongst this neighborhood quarter, neighborhood retail C stores, so that taking out some other dance hall, commercial kennels, and other intrusive or uses that we're not looking for along this neighborhood commercial quarter area. This being a kind of combined presentation, the same conditions that you saw on the Colonial Circle car wash and gas sales, we're looking at those exact same conditions. And again, excuse me, the applicant is objecting or had concerns with condition 5 based upon some of the previous same discussions that we talked about. So I'm going to go on to her presentation so that she can provide some of the greater detail in the applicant's presentation.
Thank you for the opportunity to present. So again, my name is Kelsey Schlein. I'm a planner with Schimpf Engineering here on behalf of Dusty Christian, who is the property owner and also the owner of Christian Excavating Associates. That is that business that he runs is the reason that we're before you tonight, requesting a rezoning and special use permit so that he can locate some of his business operations a little closer to his primary residence. So next slide, please. So Douglas already went over the site. This is a 14-acre parcel on Lake Monticello Road, located directly across the street from the somewhat recently constructed Fluvanna salt storage. Next slide. Just looking at a few street views of the site. As you can see, there is already an entrance going into the site. And I'll go into that in a little more detail about how review of the entrance and site improvements will occur in more detail as the process, as the project moves through the site plan phase. But here's just some views along the Lake Monticello corridor in front of the property. Next slide, please. Just showing the comprehensive plan and the property's location within the designated growth area. And as Douglas already mentioned, there's a few other business uses located along Lake Monticello Road, and we feel that this will just continue to kind of contribute to that kind of the relatively or to the neighborhood complementary business scale that's taking shape on that corridor. Next slide, please. Just looking at the site and zoning context, directly across the street from a commercial property, as well as a business commercial property as well. Next slide. So here is a schematic site plan of what's proposed on the site. So you can see that there's an entrance coming from Lake Monticello Road and the approximate location of the existing entrance that we saw in the street view earlier in the presentation. And then a gravel area is proposed for parking of excavation vehicles, dump trucks, excavators, everything that supports that business. And then there is a warehouse proposed as well, so that some of the machinery can be parked inside, and additionally it can be worked on inside, sheltered from the elements. There is again, the landscape ordinance comes into play here for screening this property from the Lake Monticello corridor. A proposed landscape screening mound is proposed to kind of maintain that wooded character that is established on Lake Monticello Road. Next slide. As Douglas mentioned, we are proffering out some uses. Proper out uses that are typically affiliated with, considered to be slightly more intense, that are by right in the B1 district. We have no changes to the proper statement as proposed at this point. And next slide, please. So going into the commercial entrance, because I definitely know there have been a few concerns just about access to and from the site here. So the entrance approval is certainly a site plan issue for review and compliance with VDOT standards at the site plan phase. But I did just want to show here in this diagram, we have a kind of the one of the largest commercial entrances that could be approved on this property, one of the largest commercial entrances that is effectively required by VDOT. So we have 50-foot radius there, kind of a 30-foot spacing in between from radius to radius, and that effectively kind of creates this lip of pavement off of Lake Monticello Road that is, I think, approximately 100 feet. So that just allows for larger vehicles to safely enter and exit the site. Especially, I think, one of the more, concerning movements that VDOT would have of large vehicles exiting the site is making the right out headed towards Route 53. If a large vehicle were to come out and traverse into the eastbound lane to make that maneuver, having a large entrance with generous radiuses allows very large vehicles to make those maneuvers without obstructing another lane of traffic. And I know that I understand that there are some concerns about this, and I can definitely assure you that it is certainly a concern of VDOT's as well. And so this will be something, the entrance location, the width, the specifications, everything that this entrance standard will be designed to will be reviewed in more detail at the site plan stage. I just wanted to show this kind of for feasibility purposes to see what one of the largest commercial entrances would look like on the property. There is a generous amount of property frontage. And a good deal of space to work with for flexibility to get the entrance to accommodate all of Christian Excavating's vehicles on the property. Next slide. And that's all that I have for you tonight. I am the applicant and the owner of the property. Dusty is also on the property. And so if you'd like to add anything additionally, please chime in, Dusty. And if not, planning commission, just know that both of us are available to respond to any questions you may have. Thank you.
Does any members of the planning commission have any questions for the applicant or Mr. Miles? Okay, no questions. We will open the public hearing right now for ZMP 2101 and SUP 2101. Anyone wishing to speak on this, please state your name and your address, please. No one coming forward to speak at the public hearing. We'll turn it over to discussion by the Planning Commission. My particular thing is I don't see any real concerns. It looked like the applicant had done a good job about the screening and so forth like that. And I think that during the site plan process, any problem with that entrance, they'll take care of. They seem like they're willing to take care of anything.
I have to disagree, Mr. Chairman. If you look at the zoning code, the zoning code for this allows it to be a B1, but then requires a special use permit for a use that is actually listed as a by right in industrial. So then if you look at the comprehensive plan calls for neighborhood and residential in this area with supporting mixed use. And supporting mixed use is in the comprehensive plan as retail and things like that to support the community. Whereas when you start talking about the industrial nature of an excavating company, I have a problem with it.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions or anything like that? We've ended discussion. Do have a motion on ZMP 2101?
I move that the Planning Commission deny approval of the SUP. What's the number on the SUP?
We're doing that separate.
We're on the portion at this time.
We're on the ZMP 2101 at this time.
That's the rezoning. So I move that the Planning Commission deny approval of ZMP 2101, request amendment for Granite County zoning map on 14 acres of Patch Plant 9, Section 8, Parcel 12A, to rezone the same from A1 Agricultural General to B1 Business General and subject to the proper dated February 1st, 2021.
I have a motion by Mr. Lagostino. Do I have a second? We do not have a second. Do I have any other motions?
I have a motion to be approved. I recommend that the Planning Commission approve of ZMP 2101, your request to amend through that county zoning map on 14 plus or minus acres of tax map 9, section 8, parcel 12A, to rezone the same from A1 agricultural general to B1 business general and subject to the proper stated February 1st, 2021.
Do I have a second? Ms. Mary Key seconds. I have a motion by Mr. Johnson, a second by Ms. Mary Key. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Vote is 3-1 to approve and one absent. Okay. We'll go to the next item is the...
Mr. Bibb, we now have to do the motion for the...
That's what.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going on to the next public hearing.
That's what I was getting ready to do.
I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. The next item is the SUP 2101. Do I have a motion for this?
I have a question. Like number 5, the proper that it was taken out?
Right.
Why would you do that?
I think that's still included in the motion right here.
Yes, it's included. We've recommended it staff to, okay. Just like on the previous case.
Yeah.
I was just trying to demonstrate that the applicant, also Mr. Christian, did not agree with the fact that he would not have a need in orderly site. And again, reiteration of that this property for the next 20 or 30 years may not be maintained, unfortunately, or in that manner. And so we would like to have future code enforcement opportunities. If not, we really feel that Mr. Christian, bringing this site to the fruition for him, it's been his lifelong dream to return, bought the property, he's operated the facility, and we feel he will do a proper job to do that. So we do support leaving that in as condition 5.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do I have a motion on SUP 2101?
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of SUP 2101 and request to construct the contractor storage yard on Tax Map 9, Section A, Parcel 12A, subject to the 7 conditions in the statute.
I have a motion by Ms. Mary Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Johnson, so we have a motion by Ms. Mary Key to accept, a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
Chair votes aye, 3-1 with one absent. It is approved.
Thank you, Planning Commission.
Thank you. The next item is SUP 2004, Cunningham Solar LLC.
Okay, this request, SUP 2004, Cunningham Solar LLC, is for a major utility solar energy facility land use request. We do have SunTribe Solar staff and CBEC staff on for this request, and I will present. This is a little more unique request as opposed to the two previous ones we worked on. So I'll go into some more detail and then allow for the SunTribe Solar folks to present as well. So this location of this proposal is at the Cunningham substation, just down on South Boston Road from the Cunningham roundabout, and it's adjacent to their existing CBEC substation. This is the subject property located on South Boston Road, just outside of past Cunningham roundabout. Again, this is an aerial view. I will point out that we do have the Hopkins Acres Habitat for Humanity area here, this area here, residential, with the applicant's work to provide proper buffering and screening from those future homes in that vicinity, and the folks in SunTribe Solar will go into that a little further as part of this request. So looking at our comprehensive plan, this is also the previous two requests that you heard. This is also in the Ravana Community Planning Area, in our designated growth area in the comprehensive plan. We do have green infrastructure and energy efficiency requirements or recommendations. And in this aspect, clean green energy helps support planning and concepts for the comprehensive plan, and that we're moving forward in Virginia with solar energy facilities to help support the energy needs that we have here in Savannah and Central Virginia for CBEC. The applicant has also worked as far as the preservation of the wetland areas on the rear portion of this property. They're working with us along with the design of the facility for wildlife corridor areas to be integrated to allow for animals and more environmental feature things to not have such an impact, and also for in comprehensive plan the preservation of this farmland area that's around here as opposed to being developed for homes or commercial aspects adjacent to the substation. Some of the special use permit conditions, this request does come to you all as a 5-megawatt major utility use that they're proposing as far as providing solar energy to go into the grid through the Cunningham substation. Some of our conditions that are highlighted that we recommend, there are no pile driving of the posts and racking systems and site deliveries on Sundays. However, Monday through Saturdays, there would not be any restrictions. These construction phases that they have, the construction traffic management plan condition is there. You're familiar with traveling on South Boston Road. The entrance actually is down towards the bottom of the hill. In the creek and lower area of this, so we have some slight concerns that we think the traffic management plan, the VDOT would help offset any of those during construction, and to assist with that on-site parking and staging plan for construction, the condition throughout the construction process. As best they can do as impossible for construction mitigation or dust and smoke during site demolition and timbering process or any other things that they're able to do to prepare the site, that they provide some type of mitigation for that to not enter into the adjoining neighborhood residential properties. Standard 50-foot buffer setback on the public rights of way, and within that same 50-foot area, 25-foot buffer site screening. They're looking at utilizing as much of the natural vegetation and screening that's there now. We actually had a good amount of discussion, Mr. Lagomasino, at the TRC meeting about fire chief notification and public safety training for this type of new land use. So at the time of the construction phases, the Flavanna fire chief would be notified. So I think Chief, former Chief Brent and Chief Constantino and some others had some recommendations for them, and a lot of the same recommendations I think that they've heard in Albemarle County and other surrounding areas. And then also after the solar energy facility would be under operation, that there would be a notification for the fire chief and sheriff's department to be able to respond appropriately. And last but not least, the decommissioning plan at some point in the future, in 20 to 30 year time frame, if this land became more valuable for other commercial development or other things, or if they just chose to cease using the solar energy facility there, that the decommissioning plan would go through the planning review process and the county attorney review for decommissioning of that solar energy, removal of the panels. And SunTribe Solar actually has a rather rigid and solid plan in place that they will propose if that was ever needed. So those are the recommended conditions that we have. And at this point, Chairman Bibb, I would turn it over to Bobby Jodis from SunTribe Solar for his presentation.
Thank you.
Good evening, Chairman Bibb, Mr. Miles, and ladies and gentlemen of the Planning Commission. Thank you for your time this evening. Tonight, I'm here to present for your consideration our Cunningham Solar Center project, seeking special use approval to construct a 5-megawatt solar energy facility on County Parcel 18A44. Okay, slide, please. Here with me tonight is our development team, led by myself, Bobby Jose, project developer. Also here with me is Danny Van Cleef, our CEO, Mike Stanton, our Vice President of Development, and Becca Stoner, our development engineer. For those of you who may not be familiar with us, SunTribe is a solar development and EPC company established and based just right down the road in Charlottesville. We develop commercial, industrial, and utility scale projects, working with landowners, schools, and local governments all across the Commonwealth, including here in Flavanna County, to help them meet their renewable energy goals. Our team here tonight is part of the same team that's worked on the county school projects, and we've had the opportunity to develop a great working relationship with Flavanna County and utilize our experience to deliver high quality projects to the county and its residents. The project site is, again, County Parcel 18A44, located off of Route 600, adjacent to the current CVEC Cunningham substation. The site is approximately 62 acres. It's currently zoned A1 and currently has no land use. There is some abandoned structures on the site, but other than that, the site is largely vacant. Next slide, please. Just to show a little bit more detail about the parcel, this is an ALTA survey we performed. As you can see, there's very little that exists on the project site currently. You can see the abandoned structures and the existing power line running through the center, the CVEC substation to the southwest, and then the CVEC power lines running to the west of the parcel, and then an access easement for a few residences running along the southern edge of the parcel. The project is a 5-megawatt AC solar energy facility. We'll take approximately 30 acres of the site, so that's approximately 48% of the site area. Approximately 27 acres of clearing will need to be required for the site. However, a majority of the existing vegetation will be left to remain on the project site. Access will be from a gravel drive off of Route 600, which will be approved or improved to VDOT standard and will be subject to approval by the county and VDOT through the site plan approval process. The project will produce approximately enough power to approximately power 1,000 homes for a year, and it connects to the distribution lines that are currently on site, so no new power infrastructure will be needed to be developed for the project. We expect the project to have a lifespan of approximately 25 to 35 years, and after the project lifespan will be removed, and the project will be, or the parcel will be restored to its current condition. So, next slide, please. We've designed the project to avoid any sensitive environmental and historical resources. We've done a number of studies, which I'll explain a little bit further in the presentation. And again, vegetation, a large portion of the existing vegetation on site will remain, especially along Route 600 and north of the project site, adjacent to the existing residential areas. Where necessary to supplement that vegetation, because it's not sufficient, we will establish additional vegetated buffering, which will include a 25-foot vegetated buffer utilizing double staggered rows of evergreen trees planted 10 foot on center. And we will be conforming to all vegetated screening requirements that the county is subject to the project. Here's a preliminary design for the project. As you can see, the dotted lines here are where we're preserving existing vegetation. So the project will set back significantly more than the required 50 feet. As you can see, there is a wildlife corridor here through the center of the site where some existing streams and wetlands are located. And a small portion down in the bottom corner is where we will analyze and ensure that if the existing vegetation isn't sufficient to screen the project, we will be sure to supplement with planted vegetation. Next slide, please. As part of the development, we've run a number of different studies on the site to ensure that we aren't impacting the environmental conditions on site. Those include a stream and wetland study, which identified about 6,500 linear feet streams and 3.76 acres of wetlands. Those will be avoided with a vegetated buffer and will be impacted. We also looked at any potential cultural historic resources located on or near the site. We found that no National Historic Register eligible archaeological or cultural resources are identified on the site or within a half mile buffer. And then finally, we looked at any sensitive wildlife that might be located on the site. These include any federal or state threatened or endangered species. And we found both in a desktop screening and field study that no suitable habitat exists on the site for any of those threatened and endangered species. The project will provide some value to the community. It's in line with Fluvanna County's target industries, light industries for the area. 85% of Fluvanna County is served by CVEC, who will be utilizing power for the project. And this infrastructure will benefit them, the residents and businesses that make up CVEC's Fluvanna County residents. The project will also utilize less than 50% of the project site and will help protect and preserve the rural land for future land use, while preventing it from being utilized for a conventional and roadside strip development. And then finally, a little bit more about the development and construction and operation of the project. Construction would last approximately 6 months. Will be limited to the hours stipulated in the project conditions. Approximately 20 construction and construction management personnel will be on site per day. These construction and construction management personnel are all from the area, or largely from the area, some of which here live in Flavanna County. Improvements to access roads will be made and approved by VDOT as part of the site plan review process, and a traffic management plan will also be developed and approved, outlining traffic control measures to ensure that we're not impacting any of the project's surrounding neighbors. There's very little that involves operation of the facility. It takes place largely remotely. No staff will be on site daily, and during operation, trips to the site will be reduced to that necessary for general maintenance, maybe one or two trips to the site per month. And then finally, once the lifespan of the project has concluded, we will put a plan in place with the county to remove all of the equipment, which includes any panels, inverters, racking, concrete pads, cabling, and other electrical equipment. The site will be restored to its current condition, and we will be removing and recycling where possible all debris and components from the site. That's the short presentation I have for you all this evening. Again, thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to answering any questions that you might have.
Anybody have any questions? Thank you.
Yes, sir.
If no questions by the Planning Commission at this time, we'll open the public hearing for SUP 2004 Cunningham Solar LLC. Anyone wishing to speak on this matter, please state your name and address. You will be limited to 5 minutes.
Hi, this is Julie Cassell Bryant. My address is 120 South Boston Road. This project adjoins my property. Do I have permission to speak?
Yes, you do. You'll be limited to 5 minutes.
So I understand from the previous, one of the earlier slides, there were some setbacks that did not align with what was on the document that I was that was shared with me with regards to minimum setbacks of rear yard of being 75 feet and side yard being 50 feet. Again, this is adjoining my property. So I just want to be clear I understand about those setbacks.
There are 50 and 25 feet setbacks required. I think Mr. Miles is bringing that up.
Yes.
Okay, so what was presented to us was going to be a no less than 75 feet adjoining our property.
Yes, although our condition stipulates 50 feet, as I mentioned, in many places, including adjacent to your property, that will extend larger than 50 feet.
And also, I understand that the graphic has that where there are lines, dashes, and X's, that there will just be the mature forest that is there today. As you know, when you walked it with us, the trees are mature, the canopy is above, far above the fencing, and so this would be visible to us if it's not what you're doing around or putting or planting for 600, right? Like I understand that nobody wants to see this from 600. I don't want to see it out of my back door either. So I just want to make sure I understand that nature of the planting and the vegetation that will be, you know, lining the back end of this property that's adjoining me.
Yes, ma'am. You know, again, you know, where existing vegetation isn't sufficient to screen the property, the project from your property, we will establish a planted buffer.
And then that
we'll work with you to ensure that we meet that requirement.
And then that is condition 7 that recommended by staff, that the 25-foot vegetated buffer would supplement the additional mature screening, and that's what they're proposing in their application, and we're proposing as part of the SUP conditions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak, please state your name and your address. No one coming forward, we'll end the public hearing at this time and go to discussion by the Planning Commission. Anybody have any questions or okay. Do I have a motion?
I'm getting back to there, sir. And my only concern was when I looked at the neighborhood meeting, I didn't see that people had concerns. So Ms. Bryant, you know, brought forth her issue. I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of SUP 2004, a special use permit request to allow for a major utility solar energy facility on 62.4 plus or minus acres, known as Tax Map 18, Section A, Parcel 44, and subject to the 9 recommended conditions within the staff report.
I have a motion by Ms. Mary Key for approval. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second by Mr. Lagosino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0-1 absent. Thank you.
Thank you all for your time.
The next item is SUB 2033 Ballinger Bluffs Rural Cluster Sketch Plan. This was something that was deferred from a past meeting, and I would ask Mr. Miles at this time, have the questions and concerns we had about the water availability and the effect on the neighboring properties been addressed?
Chairman Bibb, yes, good evening. I can go through the rural cluster subdivision sketch plan information, but I believe that most of you did not receive, because you were traveling here. Let me get back to Mr. Tim Miller did provide information about the chest wells. Excuse me a minute. I believe Mr. Miller is online here, but I'll go ahead and read what he sent to me at 4:21 this afternoon. I just spoke with his well driller. He was on site at the time drilling. This is 4:21 this afternoon. Drilling well 2. The well reports will not be ready until later this week. Mr. Kenny Sykes has indicated well number 1 has been completed and has a capacity of 30 gallons per minute. Well number 2 currently has a capacity of 3 gallons per minute, but it's currently being drilled and will likely increase by the time he has completed the drill work. I will forward the reports when I receive them. I wanted to give the results prior to the meeting this evening. Staff does believe that this is inadequate timing for notification. The well drilling that is started, I believe, yesterday and is commenced or maybe even completed today, it's not getting adequate time for planning commissioners and the public to evaluate this information. I know that part of the sketch plan process and review, that was one of the conditions that Mr. Miller did agree to do. I think as previous comments in the public comment session, for everyone's knowledge, the phase two portion of this development, currently at this time is under contract for going into a conservation conservancy at this point, and that is basically the courthouse tract. And currently the, I can just provide some brief information in this unfinished business item. I wasn't going to prepare an entire presentation. But the Planning Commission sketch plan review would be for major subdivision of 48.4 acres now, with the acreage of 38.7 in open space area. He is proposing at this time to have 19 rural cluster lots, approximately 7.5 acres, with one unit in the open space area, for a total of 20 dwelling units and 2.3 acres in the public road right-of-way construction area. This is his yield plan that he had previously. This is a rural clustering plan that is much, very similar to what he's proposing now. At this point, I would like to turn it back over to you, to Chairman Bibb, relative to the sketch plan request and also the SUP request. It's on an unfinished business item on the agenda currently.
Did any members of the Planning Commission see the letter that Mr. Zimmer, who was not able to be here tonight, wrote? I want to kind of read it at this time. The test wells Mr. Miller proposed do not meet the criteria I had proposed on the well process used at, he says, Walker's Ridge. I think that was actually Poplar Ridge at the time. In that instance, neighboring wells within 1,000 feet were monitored and the wells on the property were run. This way, impact of the neighboring wells could be assessed. Drilling two wells in the fashion Mr. Miller suggests will only tell us if he was fortunate enough to hit a good seam and produce a good well in that location. I'm proposing that for both of these items, the site plan and the Quigley Properties LLC, because they have not proved to us that they have adequate water to operate the sewer system or tell us what effect that the, and that was our biggest concern on the other properties. He's not proven this or given us, only starting the well drilling yesterday, 18 hours ago, does not provide us the information. And I'm going to suggest that as a commission, we continue the deferral to a time that the Planning Department has sufficient knowledge that they need to give us that information.
I would further like to add to that. I know that we had a weather situation that prevented us from being able to view the property, the proposed area. I'm not sure if I missed it, but I don't think I did. When we were going to have that opportunity again. So to me, to be fair to the property owner, as well as the home owners who will be impacted by the decision, I think that that's still an important part that Mr. Miller offered for us to do. We actually had a dual poll,
yes,
that we could sign up for and all of that. And so, and I would like to echo what you said, Mr. Chairman, because that was my concerns. When we had our last meeting, Mr. Miller was going to do these things, and we don't have any information. It's not on us that he hasn't completed that process. So I,
Mr. Miles, can we arrange those visits to the property again?
Yes, we can. Yes, and okay. Actually, the site visits we were going to do, it was way too moist and muddy at the time due to the snow melt and different rain events. So yes, that would be also appropriate if Mr. Miller allows us to enter his property.
Yeah, I don't think we've got enough information to go forward with either one of these things, and I think that the applicant has failed to give us this information. And does anyone want to make a motion about deferring this again? I think think we have approximately 40 more days that we can defer this, because you can normally defer for approximately 100 days and so forth like that. So.
Chairman, I'd recommend that if you do choose to defer this, you defer it to the
April meeting,
which would be approximately 30 days. It would be within the extra 40-day window.
Mr. Chairman, may I be heard? I'm counsel for Quigley Properties. My name is John Gilbuddy.
Yes. Speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to ask that we get clarity on what it is. There are two matters before this commission. There's SUP 2033 and SUP 2002, and I just want to ask. They're separate matters, and I want to make sure that I'm clear and that we understand what is being deferred, if indeed that is what the commission does, and the basis for such deferral, because it's not clear to us the basis for deferring whether or not the subdivision is approved,
were
the sketch plan and the yield plan, that is.
Were you there at our last meeting that we had about this?
I was not, Mr. Chairman, but I did have the opportunity to review that on YouTube, and I thought that the it was unclear, because it seemed to be that the SUP and the SUP were being considered in tandem, and it was not clear to me what the specific criteria for the SUP consideration was, and that's what I'm asking for this evening, please.
Both of them portable water.
And,
you know, both of them, they've got to prove to us that the water is available for the sewer system and for the properties, and the effect that it's going to have on the adjoining properties. And that's what we discussed with Mr. Miller. That was the reason for the deferral. He agreed to do this and provide us the information. And he has not provided any of the information that we requested, and what he's doing really is not what we're suggesting.
And may I ask the authority for what it is you're requesting in terms of the you're asking for proof that there's potable water?
Chairman, let me answer that.
Okay, our attorney is going to answer that question for you.
Thank you.
I think the first answer to the question is you can request whatever you want. The commission has the right and obligation to review the application under the ordinance. The ordinance has numerous provisions, and I can recite them to you if you want to hear them, concerning the availability of water and impact of the development on the property and other properties around, certainly the special use permit. In my judgment, the commission has identified an issue that is clearly within the scope of its authority to review a subdivision ordinance, and you have the right to defer it, you have the right to approve it, you have the right to deny it. As long as you're within the 100-day window, you have the right to continue to examine the facts to see whether this is approval in accordance with the ordinance.
We have the authority to approve, deny, or defer these projects. And it was our understanding that Mr. Miller was going to give us information. He has not provided information. We discussed that the fact that water situation was required for both items and so forth like that. So as I said earlier, I don't see how we can go forward, because they not provided us any additional information that actually was what we asked for.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not questioning the Planning Commission's authority. All I was asking for was a reference to the authority upon which the commission was basing its belief that it has plenary authority to make a decision based upon whether or not there, as it relates to the approval or disapproval of a subdivision plat, as I was asking about when, where in the code it talks about the Planning Commission's authority to base that decision on potable water. I was just looking for a reference from, and I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name of the gentleman who spoke earlier.
I'm the county attorney. My name is Fred Payne.
Thank you.
There are a number of sections in the ordinance, and I'll be glad to supply them to you if you call me in my office tomorrow.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have a question maybe Mr. Payne can help me with. So as we talked about, and we may have the opportunity to defer in April, which that would be about 30 days, so there's still 10 days left. What would happen with the balance of those 10 days if they didn't provide it by the April meeting?
It would be deemed to be recommended to the Board of Supervisors for approval. In other words, if you want to have input into this, you have to make the decision prior to the expiration of that 100-day period.
So basically, at our April meeting, we're going to have to approve or deny.
Either that or hold a special meeting.
And just also remember that the special use permit is the for the central sewer system is what would belong to the Board of Supervisors. The rules,
the sketch
plan stays here at the Planning Commission level, and you all would make any type of act, take any type of action or determination on the 8th or 13th meeting. So we feel as staff it's very crucial for the applicant and his attorney to provide us staff and the commission what we can work with the applicant on for resolving some of the concerns or issues that you all had on January 12th that has not occurred, and we provided that to you tonight.
Mr. Chair, I have my same position as I had before.
Okay, do I have a motion to approve, deny, or defer these two projects?
They should be
done separately.
This is a sketch plan.
Okay. I move that the Planning Commission defer SUV 2033 Ballinger Bluffs sketch plan, a request for 20 residential lots plus open space with respect to 48.4 plus minus acres of tax map 31, Section A, Parcel 41, and Tax Map 31, Section 1, Parcel A, subject to the four conditions within the staff report.
And that would be deferred to the April 13th meeting?
It will be deferred to the April Planning Commission meeting.
Okay, I have a motion by Ms. Mary Key to defer this to our April meeting to give the applicant time to provide additional information. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0, one absent. Thank you. We don't have any new business.
No. We still need to do this.
Oh, that's right. We got this second one to do. I'm sorry. Do I have a motion on SUP 2002.
I move the Planning Commission defer SUP 2002 Quigley Properties LLC a request for a special use permit for a central sewer system major utilities with respect to 48.4 plus minus acres of Tax Map 31, Section A, Parcel 41, and Tax Map 31, Section 1, Parcel A, and subject to the six conditions found within the staff report to the Planning Commission's April meeting.
I have a motion by Ms. Mary Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Lagosino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0, one absent. No new business. The last item is the second of two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to speak on anything about the county, please state your name and address. You will be limited to 5 minutes. Seeing no one wishing to speak, we will end the public comment section at this time. And if there's no objection by staff or the Planning Commission, we will adjourn at 8:57. We're now adjourned.